It's time for All Things Northwest with Northwest Missouri State University President, Dr. John Jasinski. Each month, President Jasinski visits with community and educational leaders about exciting developments and collaborations happening throughout our region. Support comes from United Electric Cooperative, Clarinda Regional Health Center, and Atchison Holt Electric. And now, the 10th president of Northwest Missouri State University, Dr. John Jasinski.
Welcome to this month's edition of All Things Northwest, a show devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We highlight the great work and the great play, the collaboration, and the developments throughout our region, and please know there's so much to celebrate. We here at Northwest Missouri State University and your public radio partners, KXCV, KRNW, hope you've had a chance to enjoy the beautiful fall weather and the scenery of our region. I am pleased to welcome you to the October edition of our show. We'll provide two segments this month. In segment one, we feature Ryan Hyland, the Assistant City Administrator for the City of Maryville. He'll discuss the many opportunities Mazingo Lake Recreational Area offers, as well as exciting future plans for Mazingo. In segment two, we feature Northwest Missouri State University's Dr. Mary Shepherd. Dr. Shepherd will discuss her role as chair of the Missouri Department of Higher Education's Committee on Revising Policies and Courses related to the statewide mathematics curriculum. She'll also talk about Northwest's curriculum plans for the future. Thanks for joining the All Things Northwest team, and we hope you enjoy this month's edition. To begin, I welcome Ryan Hyland to All Things Northwest. Ryan's hometown is Adel, Iowa. He holds an undergraduate degree in geography from Northwest Missouri State and an MPA from Drake University. He has worked as a city planner for the cities of Phoenix and Mesa, Arizona, as well as a couple of communities in Iowa. Ryan's family has a long history of attending Northwest. Both of his parents, his two sisters, two uncles, four cousins, and perhaps even a few more. He currently serves as Assistant City Administrator for the City of Maryville, a position he has held for the last 3 years. Ryan, welcome to All Things Northwest.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. I know you've done so much as the Assistant City Administrator. We've talked in this program before about all the good things happening within our community and certainly the partnership between Northwest and the City of Maryville. We're here to talk about Mazingo Lake Recreation Park. There's so many things there. We could fill up a couple of programs worth describing the vibrance out at Mazingo. But for those that maybe aren't quite as familiar, maybe you can kind of give a broad overview about the park, the amenities, and really what's available to visitors.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be happy to. Mazingo is a large park. I think a lot of times people are surprised at the size of Mazingo. It is 3,000 acres with a 1,000-acre lake. It's located just about 5 miles east of Maryville, so it's very close and easily accessible to the community. We have all kinds of amenities out there. Really, we always like to say there's something for everybody out at Mazingo. So obviously, a big draw to Mazingo is golf. We currently have an 18-hole championship golf course. It's home of the Bearcats ladies golf team. And then currently we are in the process of finishing up the construction of the Watson 9 golf course, and we're very excited about that. We'd hope to have that opened up this year, but due to all the rain and everything, it just couldn't get that done this year. But we're excited to open that up this spring. So golf is a big player out at Mazingo. And you know, we're talking about Mazingo, you can't really talk about it and not mention fishing. So within the last year, we were ranked in the top 100 for bass fishing lakes. And it really is a fantastic draw for fishing out there. But there's so many things to do out there. We have currently have seven, what I like to call luxury cabins. They're fully furnished out there. Currently building an eighth. We have RV camping, tent camping, equestrian camping, equestrian trails out there. So there's a lot to do out there. I know that just last year we've also just finished a lot of improvements to the beach area. And that was very popular. Probably one of the biggest improvements out there that people really liked was the addition of a swimming dock out there. That was always had people out there in the middle of the lake floating around on that. So it was pretty exciting. And then another project that we're just finishing up that we're pretty excited about There's great amenity out at Mazingo are the trails. We do have concrete trails out there. We just finished up two new segments of that. So we have about 2 miles worth of concrete paved trails out there. And then we have well over 10 miles, probably close to 20 miles worth of just grass trails out there. So again, there's everything from golf to just laying out on the beach out at Mazingo. It's a great place.
Well, listeners to All Things Northwest, we're talking with Ryan Hyland, this Assistant City Administrator for the City of Maryville. And I have to tell you, listeners, that Ryan did all that talking about Mazingo without any notes. He's just kind of spewing off all the things happening at Mazingo, but also the facts about each one of those areas. So, Ryan, as I have to look at my own notes here, but as I look at my notes, you know, you had mentioned the Sechrest 18-hole golf course and the Watson 9. I want to talk a little bit more about the Watson 9 here in a few minutes. But, you know, that lake is so special with the three paved fishing ramps and the 26-mile-long shoreline. I think people forget about that. Then you talk about boating and the boat slips and the 1,000 acres of water and all of that. You mentioned the hiking, the unbelievable hunting area, the equestrian and the youth camp. And then you're kind of mentioning, you know, hey, you've got all these trails out there. I know that my wife, her and I go out there. We take our dog, Ruby, and, you know, we run and run the trails. We run, kind of the grasslands, et cetera, and take it all in. So, and we see so many people out there, and I think that's the beauty is that there really is something for everyone out there. Ryan, this doesn't just happen by accident, though. I mean, this has been a long-time project. And we've talked on this program about how it came about previously, but all these improvements that have been taking place or are being planned here in the next few years, there's been kind of a, I don't know the exact official name, a master planning committee that has helped shape all this. Can you kind of talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the park is 20 years old, and it certainly has had some guidance to get to where it is today. Really, the first group that got involved with that is the city-appointed Mazingo Advisory Board. That's a 9-member board, and they do a fantastic job. It's a volunteer board, and so they've done a fantastic job of kind of guiding the growth and direction of that. And then one of the biggest projects that we've completed, probably one of the biggest projects for the history of and the future of Mazingo, is the 20-year Mazingo Master Plan, and we just wrapped that up. This has passed, well, I guess it's about a year now, so time flies, but it's been about a year now. And that plan really lays out the future vision for Mazingo for the next 20 years and how we see Mazingo developing. And that was a project, it was about a 6-month-long process that we went through with that master plan. We had a lot of community input into that plan, a lot of input from the advisory board, from city council, from local residents. So it really is a reflection of not just city staff's vision of Mazingo, but the community's vision for what we want to see Mazingo out there. It really is just an amazing resource and facility to have in this community.
Well, we're just so appreciative of the advisory committee, the city council, everybody that's helped shape not just the progress to date, but certainly the future, the 20-year plan, as you had mentioned. That doesn't just come about, though, and we thank you for your leadership and your service with that. I also would mention to listeners that we had that 20-year celebration here in the summer.
We did.
Of the park, and that was just a prolific event. Just, I hope that we can continue that in the future. But let's talk about the Watson 9. So, you know, we had a program devoted to Tom Watson several months ago, and Tom was very eloquent about really the importance of this project. But from your view, Ryan, what do you think, you know, as it comes open next spring, we get to the winter, and it would be the right time to open that course. What do you think the impact that Watson 9 will have kind of on not just the golfers of the region, but tourism and certainly Mazingo itself?
It's such an exciting project. You know, you brought up the 20th anniversary celebration that we had this summer, and you actually spent some time in the dunk tank for us with that.
Yes,
and that was
and literally in the tank itself.
Yeah,
yes,
it was cold water, and I don't think it was a very soft landing, but
it was fun.
We certainly appreciate that. And what we did that for was to raise funds for the junior golf program. So when you look at the Watson 9, even before it opens up, it has an amazing history. Just kind of a quick backstory on that is that the city was approached less than 2 years ago, probably about 2 years ago, just by a group of local residents who saw an opportunity to develop a golf course to develop junior golfers out at Mazingo. And they approached the city with this idea, can we do this out there? We're going to raise all the funds. The city really doesn't have to do anything. We'll take care of everything. And we said yes. And it started from there, and they started fundraising. And the next thing you knew, they're talking about Tom Watson's involvement for the design of the golf course. And, you know, just to having Tom Watson involved, you know, he's an 8-time major champion, 2-time master champion, 5-time open champion. It's just amazing credentials. It's already, before it's even opened up, we've had articles written about it in the United Kingdom. And then we've had it, I know it was talked about at a major golf conference in Florida this past year. So it's already receiving a lot of attention, even before it's opened it up. And to have just such a grassroots effort from local residents to want to see this out there is really amazing. I think it has the potential to really be kind of the gold standard for how golf courses operate, to attract new golfers, to develop youth golf, and to even bring in not necessarily youth golfers, but maybe beginners, maybe somebody who's, you know, in their 40s or 50s and always wanted to golf but was a little intimidated to go out on a full-size 18-hole golf course. This is a perfect opportunity to experience that, to learn golf.
What's so amazing behind that is we all know, for those of us that do golf, I wouldn't call myself a golfer, but those of us that get on the golf course, you know, the Sechrest 18 is so very special in and of itself. But then you put the Watson 9, then you have all these, the boating and the swimming and the beaches and the equestrian and all the hiking trails. Certainly, you know, for those during the hunting season, there's just so many things that come to life. And, you know, just recently here in the last few weeks, Northwest hosted Missouri Hope out there at Mazingo. And, you know, again, listeners, we've had that on the program too, actually, but profession-based experience for Northwest Missouri State University students. But we brought in 20 agencies, had over 150, 200 volunteers, and so on. So many things happening out there. Another exciting plan to Mazingo is Boulders Inn & Suite with their recent announcement, Ryan, of the construction of a 40-room hotel at Mazingo. Kind of talk about that for our listeners.
Yeah, again, another exciting project. That really came about three, four years ago. The city council wanted to explore the possibility to have a lodge out at Mazingo, and so they commissioned a feasibility study. And so that's really where that started. And then when the city went through the comprehensive plan process, they included as a goal for the community to develop a lodge out at Mazingo. And so then, again, I'd already talked about the 20-year master plan. That's certainly a central component to the 20-year master plan is the lodge conference center complex out there. It, you know, Mazingo is really such a special place. I've said that before, and I can't say it enough, but it really is a special place. And it's amazing an amenity for local community, not just from a quality of life standpoint, but really from an economic development tool. It really does have that potential to draw in a regional crowd. So you have people coming in from all over the place. But it's just kind of an example. We were recently awarded the Girls State Golf Tournament. Having a facility like Boulders just allows us to be able to continue to bring in really exciting, impressive events like that. And you just brought up the Hope event out there as well. You know, with a hotel and a conference center, you really have the ability to kind of continue partnering with Northwest and Moera, and to do those corporate events where maybe one day they're over at Moera doing team building exercises, and the next day they come over and they're playing on the Watson 9, and then they have a study session or some type of conference in the conference center. So it really is a key component to that future vision of what Mazingo can be and how the community sees that growing moving forward.
All very exciting, no doubt about it. And I was talking to one of my kids recently, and they said, you know, Dad, you can just see Mazingo developing into one of the, if not the, premier destinations, not just in the state of Missouri, but well beyond. And that's high praise coming from, you know, one of my children, but it's also coming from the eyes of, hey, I've been elsewhere, and this thing is pretty darn special. So no question about it, Ryan, a lot going on. Now, there are some challenges, some opportunities moving forward? You know, how is Mazingo funded? Are we in it for the long haul? How do we make sure this is sustainable overall? So how do you approach that?
Sure. We do have, currently Mazingo is partially funded by a half-cent sales tax. I've had questions about that. Is it a sales tax or a property tax? It is a half-cent sales tax. So that actually sunsets in 2017. But we are looking to potentially go back to the voters this spring in 2016 and request to have that sales tax continued, not to have it increased or anything like that, but just keep the sales tax as it is and to keep Mazingo moving forward as it is. So that's certainly a big part of the community supporting Mazingo and buying into Mazingo, and we certainly really appreciate that. We've been very good stewards with the money and over the past 20 years, and that's really what has allowed us to be in the position we are today, to really be looking at these big picture items. Just this past year, we did over $600,000 worth of capital improvements out at Mazingo, and it really improved the park, and that included paving new roads, new picnic tables, so many things that we were able to do with those funds. We put it right back into the park, but it's such an amazing amenity for the community.
Well, Ryan, as you take a step back a little bit and think about Mazingo and its impact, and if somebody said, Ryan Hyland, Assistant City Administrator, you're on All Things Northwest right here on KXCB Maryville, Karen W. Chillicothe. Well, what's the impact? What's the impact of Mazingo Lake Recreation Park, the impact on Maryville, our region, the state, and beyond?
Well, one thing we haven't talked about is the original purpose for Mazingo, and that's as the water reservoir. I think that's often overlooked with all the exciting events that are going on out at Mazingo, but that's probably the biggest impact. You think about it's been a little wet these past couple of years, but you know, right before that, we had kind of a prolonged drought going on, and just having that consistent water source, not just for Maryville, but for Nottoway County, is really, I don't think you can understate the value of that. So when we look at, you know, the tax renewals and things like that, it all goes to support the essential mission of Mazingo, which is to provide quality of life to the community, and that includes Mazingo as a water reservoir. So it's really one thing I've learned from working out at Mazingo and working with everybody involved in Mazingo, and you talk to all the guests and you talk to local residents, is there's just a real sense of pride about Mazingo. It's so unique. It makes Maryville really special. When you've got the university, we've got great school systems, and we've got all these great things, and that includes Mazingo. So it's just such a, we used to call it a hidden gem, and I don't think it's as hidden anymore, but it's certainly still a gem, and we are working at polishing that up and showing it off to the community.
Very well said, Ryan, and I could not agree with you more, and I know so many listeners support all of that, because it really isn't a hidden gem anymore. It's really known here and so many other venues, so many other places. And so we're appreciative of your leadership, all those that support you. Thank you for what you've done at Mazingo and what you'll continue to do here in the future.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That was Ryan Hyland, the Assistant City Administrator for the City of Maryville. When we return to All Things Northwest, we'll visit with Dr. Mary Shepherd. We'll discuss her chairship of the Missouri Department of Higher Education's Committee on Statewide Mathematics Curriculum Review. You're listening to All Things Northwest on KXCB Maryville, KRNW, Chillicothe.
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from Atchison Holt Electric Cooperative, providing power to members in Northwest Missouri and Southwest Iowa. Atchison Holt Electric reminds you to take note of overhead electrical lines when moving portable grain augers and combines this harvest season. More information is at www.ahec.coop. Support for All Things Northwest comes from SSM Health Medical Group, offering patients 10 locations and access to 46 primary care providers and specialists associated with St. Francis Hospital in Maryville. More information is available at SSMHealthSt.com/locations. Support for KXCV KRNW comes from Atchison Holt Electric Cooperative, providing power to members in Northwest Missouri and Southwest Iowa. This harvest season, Atchison Holt Electric reminds you to survey your work areas and to stay at least 10 feet away from all overhead power lines while operating large equipment. More information at www.ahec.coop.
Welcome back to the October edition of All Things Northwest. I'm your host, John Jasinski. We'll now visit with Dr. Mary Shepherd. Mary Shepherd is a professor here at Northwest Missouri State University, where she's been on the faculty since 2001. Prior to that, she was at SUNY Potsdam for 5 years. She has been active at the regional level, the statewide level, and nationally. Just for example, serving as a member of the Committee on Teaching Undergraduate Mathematics, serving on the Audit Committee of the Mathematical Association of America, and serving as a member of the Budget and Audit Committees of that Mathematical Association of America. Outside of those activities, she most recently has been chair of the Missouri Math Pathways Task Force. That's really what we'll be talking to Mary about what's happening across the state and how we're working on curriculum alignment issues here at the state level in Missouri. Prior to returning to school for a PhD in mathematics from Washington University in St. Louis, she was an accountant and worked for Hertz Rent-A-Car, Unirex Incorporated, Donald C. Slauson, oil producer, and that's just to name a few. She has a Master's of Accountancy from the University of Oklahoma and passed the CPA exam that same year. Undergraduate degree in music performance, clarinet, and now here she is. She's here on our show. Dr. Mary Shepherd, welcome to All Things Northwest.
Thank you, Dr. Jasinski. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're so pleased to have you. I didn't mention to our listeners that, you know, your interests include differential geometry, reading mathematics, visualizing mathematics using counted cross-stitch, music, and running. So lots of interests, but focus certainly on mathematics. And we really need to kind of dive right there. If we think about the state of mathematics education overall, not just in the state of Missouri, but nationally, everybody talks about, oh, you know, we've got disconnects and students don't like math or they don't perform that well in mathematics. How would you describe the state of math education today?
Now you pick a hard question to start with.
That was a real softball there, huh?
Math education, it's very varied across the country. We have some good things happening. We have a lot of interest from people, but we also have a strange acceptance that people cannot do math and that's okay to not be good at math. You never hear somebody say, I can't read. But you all the time hear, well, I'm not good in math. I can't do math. And so there's a mindset that's particularly prevalent in the United States that it's okay not to be good at math. And it's not the same in other countries. So when we look at math education, we look at not only what is maybe causing that, but what can we do to get rid of that fear or that disconnect that many students or many people in general feel about math. And that's sort of where we're coming from with the interest in what is now the Math Pathways Project. This is a project that's supported by the Dana Center and Complete College America, but its purpose is to have us no longer accept the 30 to 40% fail rate in college algebra and other courses that is standard and sort of even accepted across the United States. What can we do to fix that? What are the things that will make it give students the right things to do in math so that they are no longer not confident about their math, but they can use their math in whatever degree they choose, whatever profession they choose. But it's a hard task. It's sort of like we're just sort of getting at the root of what the issues are right now and trying to figure out what things might be working.
Well, let's talk about that Math Pathways Task Force a little bit more then, Mary. I know that you guys came together and you had referenced some, I think for our listeners, probably some pretty brutal statistics there, you know, kind of an accepted 30 to 40% dropout rate, if you will, or non-pass rate in college algebra. That's nationwide. And as we've talked in this program before, college completion is critical for the success, the long-term success of this country. And if a student's not doing well in, say, for example, college algebra, there's a chance that they may not be retained overall, may not graduate. So the importance of getting to the root cause, going back to college algebra and math in general, is really important. So the Pathways Task Force was born how long ago? How many people serve on it? You happen to be the chair. How'd you become chair? And what's your overall goal? So let's talk about that task force.
All right. The task force came into existence about a year ago, just about a year ago right now. How did I get chosen to be part of it or the chair of it? I have no clue. And that's really the truth.
I better not tell you the truth then.
No. literally, I got an email from Rusty Monholland at the state level, and he said, would you chair this task force? Not telling me exactly what the task force was about. You know, Math Pathways Task Force, we need you to go to this conference in Dallas in about 5 days. Can you handle that? Okay. And I said, yes, thinking it was like a typical service where you're going to have a lot of people doing the work and you sort of, and the state people were going to be doing most of the work. You know, the faculty would sort of be on the back burner, which is not what happened. When we put the task force together, we have one representative on the task force from all of the 26 public two-year and four-year colleges and universities in the state of Missouri. So our task force is large, plus it has a couple of MDHE people on it.
Missouri Department of Higher Education.
Right,
for
to Rusty as the facilitator and one of his assistants that sort of does all the logistics of what needs to be done, keeps us on track and everything. It was born out of, there was, and I may not have the right name for it, there was the College Completion Academy. And from that, the state of Missouri submitted a proposal. And it's that proposal. There were 14 states that submitted proposals, and Missouri was one of the states chosen to do the Math Pathways project. And that's where that came from. And that college completion was about 2 years ago that started. So that's sort of where this all came about.
And there's no question. We first of all, thank you for your leadership. Being chosen as chair of such an esteemed group of mathematics professionals, two- and four-year institutions, you know, it just speaks to your leadership, Marion. So thank you for taking on the mantle of leadership there. But as you look back over the first year, let's talk about what the group did, the Pathways Task Force, what you guys did during the first year and what you accomplished.
Our initial, our mandate that we set for ourselves was that we would sort of look at what the situation was in the state of Missouri and see if we could figure out some recommendations based on state and national data about what we might pursue as far as the four or five major tasks that we might recommend that either colleges and universities pursue or the Missouri Department of Higher Education encourage colleges and universities to pursue that would lead students into more success in their college math courses. The big deal about why college math courses are the issue is that it is the one course that you can say if students do not get through that in the first year and a half, their chance of completing college with some kind of degree, two-year, four-year, is around 10%. It's critical for us to get the students into a college math course that they can be successful at. That was sort of the what was behind what was going on.
I just want to make sure our listeners heard that. I want to make sure I heard that for sure, that if a student doesn't successfully complete that initial mathematics course, they have a 10% chance.
Well, don't hold me to the 10%. I mean, it might be 12% or 15%.
It's a small percentage across.
This is across the nation.
Two and four-year institutions and nationally.
Right. Okay. Right. And this came out of a study in California.
Right.
And
so,
it really relates to the two-year colleges where you have the major number of students that are totally unprepared to come to college to begin
with. So bottom line is it behooves us to understand root causes, to understand what we're doing, what we're not doing, some best practices, et cetera. So that's the first year. Now all of a sudden, here we go. It's year number two. I know that you're actually traveling nationally for a conference later this month on behalf of Northwest Missouri State and the state of Missouri. But talk about your your goals as a pathway task force and your goals as chair for that task force in year two?
One of our major recommendations had to deal with creating what would be called math pathways. Math pathways, Northwest actually already has these. The issue is that across the state, it's not well publicized, and there are schools that do not have them. A math pathway is a small set of courses, say maybe three or four, that are targeted general education courses that instead of having everybody take college algebra, which is not the requirement at Northwest, but is it the requirement at some schools, you have a course that is their, what we would call their directed gen ed, that is directed by their major. So a psychology student, a directed gen ed is general statistics. And so instead of college algebra, they see a course that they're going to see an application for within their degree program, which does a tremendous amount for them saying, now I understand why I'm taking this math course.
There's relevance there.
There's relevance. And that's the big deal, is to figure out how to do this, what the courses should be, what the big major, this is also what we might have, might still be calling the meta major idea. If you've got all the people in a certain, say, the STEM fields, what is the math course they need to, we need to direct them to? This helps with advising, helps get them in the right place at the right time. And our big goal is to start working on that at the state level, to create these actual pathways, which will say, I've got this degree at this school. This is the course I take. If I were to transfer, that course will be the same course that I need in another school for that same degree.
Trying to make the system, obviously, again, set up courses relevant for the students at their home institution, but making the system more ease of transfer,
yes,
more seamless, if you will.
Yes, and that's very true, especially for the two-year schools, because they want their students to start their two-year degree, get their two-year degree, and then go on to a four-year school. And if the four-year school requires college algebra, even if that's not the best one, then the two-year school is then required to get the student through college algebra, which is where the big failure rate is.
Well, and you had mentioned that Northwest Missouri State University has been doing some things for some time, so perhaps we're ahead of the pack on some areas. But talk about the state of mathematics education here at Northwest and how the task force's findings are perhaps helping us.
Well, this summer I went and talked to the deans and talked about us actually figuring out if the tracks that we had, the directed gen eds that we had, were the right ones for the majors that the students were in. And if we needed to, in our case, tweak the courses or change the courses in some way to make them much more relevant within pathways. This summer, toward the end of the summer, we sent out a survey that had, maybe 150 different mathematical skills or concepts, and to ask faculty, which of these do you need? Will you see your students maybe using as they come along? We just got the results back from that now. When I say the results, we have the raw data back from that last week, and so we're just now starting to look at it. And we'll be spending, here at Northwest, we'll be spending this next year trying to see if we need to make changes to our courses, if we need to not make changes to our courses. That's just as relevant as whether you're going to make changes or not.
Okay. So, any other curriculum changes here at Northwest to talk about at all?
One of the big things that came out of this task force is there is now, there wasn't at the time that we did it about 5 years ago, there is now what is considered best practices in remedial education. And one of the recommendations in our task force report is to encourage schools to start using best practices. MDHE might say, yes, you're supposed to be using practices, but we need as many different people pointing you toward that as possible. One of those best practices is what's called a co-requisite model for remediation, as opposed to you have to take a course, which we had as math skills, where you have to take a course or two courses before you're allowed to take your first college-level math course. And there were places where there were three courses that they had to take before they... So if they took them in order, they couldn't even take their first college-level math course until their fourth semester, which is putting them way seriously in jeopardy of ever completing a degree. We are, at the moment, figuring out how to do the proposals for this co-requisite model. Hopefully we'll have those, we'll be working on that this coming year also. Hopefully we'll have them tied together with the pathways that we're creating, the courses, the tweaks we're doing to the courses, and the co-requisite. A co-requisite model is where you do, instead of our current model, which is make everybody get through intermediate algebra, there's not a lot of particular algebraic skills that are taught in that intermediate algebra that you need in a general statistics class. There's very little that are needed in the concepts class, which is our liberal arts math course, but they're very intense mathematical courses. They just don't map the intensity at the algebra level. And we'll be working on those, as I said, this year. And the co-requisite model is a just-in-time remediation for the stuff that students need outside of that course. So, for instance, in a general statistics class, they need to have some concept of how to read graphs, for instance. And they come in weak in that. Then we go out a week or 2 weeks before that, and in this co-requisite time, we get the students that need it, just the ones that need it, up to where they need to be able successful in the course.
Listeners, you're listening to All Things Northwest on KXCB, Maryville, KRNW, Chillicothe. I'm your host, John Jasinski, and we're talking with Dr. Mary Shepherd. She's a professor of mathematics here at Northwest Missouri State University, chairing a statewide committee on math pathways. Mary, is it safe to assume that what we're really trying to do as a state and really as a nation is to retain the quality that we're teaching, not kind of dumb down the curriculum, if you will, but retain the quality, but in doing so, making it more relevant for our students, and then making sure that the pathways between majors and minors and disciplines and institutions, all those pathways are more clear. Is that kind of what we're trying to do as a nation?
That's what the National Math Pathways Project is about. Not all states have bought into it yet, obviously, but that's where those of us that are working in it are hoping that the entire nation will go that way. So,
and so with your mind's eye, as you think about the next 2, 3, 5, 10 years in math education at the collegiate level, what are your hopes?
My biggest hope is one that I have loved math since I was, little tiny person. My father did not have a high school education. He didn't graduate from high school till he was 28 years old. Yet his favorite activity was to go up and sit in a tree and work arithmetic problems. I loved arithmetic, and he finally got tired of working my arithmetic problems. If we could get that excitement just about whatever math they see, instead of the fear that they're going to have to go through this place that I struggled, if we could get through the fear, we could get our teachers, our elementary teachers, our middle school teachers, to encourage this excitement and engagement with math, because wherever they've seen it, there's an application for it. Instead of going strictly through this, one of my sayings is mathematics is about mathematics. Algebra is not all there is to mathematics. There's much more to mathematics than just algebra. And yet we focus very much on an algebraic track with what we've had. And if we could move away from algebra being the definition of mathematics, so that we have this excitement and love of mathematics and get that, start getting that into the general populace.
Well, I'm doing this interview kind of in reverse. I should have been asking, how'd you get into math? Why do you love math? How does music and running and all of that pertain to math? But instead, we'll kind of finish the interview talking about your father and 28 years old and doing, arithmetic problems and all that. But you're an avid runner. You're a musician. I know that you've used music and math together, et cetera. Kind of talk about that love and how it all comes together.
I don't know why there is a strong relationship between music and math. I know for me, I enjoyed practicing. I enjoyed doing arithmetic or math. I think it was a singular activity that you could do individually and see great progress individually. And then on the music side, you see it in the team when you're playing with a group or something like that. But there is, and I don't know the psychology or anything behind it, but there are a large number of mathematicians who are also extremely good musicians, a large number of musicians who are very good at mathematics. So there's some kind of relationship there. So But I don't know what it is.
Well, and do you find yourself, because you are an avid runner, but do you find yourself thinking about math problems as you're running or as you're going through the grocery store and so on?
I do. My running time, I'm one of those that runs without technology, so I have no music going, and I will solve math problems while I'm running. So, or I will sing music while I'm in my head while I'm running, or practice, and I'll think, oh, that's what I should be doing in that when I'm doing it. So, yes.
Well, listeners, I have a big smile because I'm reflecting really on my own childhood, where I had just some excellent grade school teachers in the math arena. They set the stage for me, but also as I think about my wife, and she's kind of math education, et cetera, thinking about kids and thinking about the influence of teachers, of faculty, and Dr. Mary Shepherd, as we reflect on problem solving, you obviously are a leader in that, saying, you know what, let's do something about math education. You're not just sitting behind the scenes talking about it. You're actually leading a state group into making the state, all of us, better. So we thank you for that, and thank you for joining All Things Northwest.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And that's a wrap for this month's show. All Things Northwest is a program devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We thank our guests, Ryan Highland, for discussing the current state and future of Mazingo Lake Recreational Area. He's the Assistant City Administrator for the City of Maryville. And Dr. Mary Shepherd from Northwest Missouri State University, she informed us on the work of the Missouri Math Pathways Task Force and some upcoming curriculum changes here at Northwest. Thanks, too, to our producer, Brendan Travis, a student here at Northwest Missouri State University, along with KXCV General Manager Rodney Harris. Friends, take good care, treat each other well, provide good works for others, and please keep celebrating and advancing our region. I'm John Chasinski, and thanks for your support of All Things Northwest, KXCV KRNW, Public Radio, and Northwest Missouri State University.
Support for All Things Northwest comes from Nottoway County Economic Development and Northwest Missouri Regional Council of Governments. More on Facebook at facebook.com/NWMORCOG. Theme music for the program was composed by Northwest professor Dr. William Richardson. The music was recorded by vocal music education major Jordan Andrews, piano, music major Daniel Bates, bass, audio and production major Mark Ludwig, drums, and Dr. William Richardson, trumpet. The program is written and produced by multimedia journalism major Ben Noley. Join us again next month for All Things Northwest.